hometown patriotism, love of our hometown. We just wrapped up Veterans Day weekend, celebrated the Marine Corps birthday with my son on November 10th. And, you know, get you sort of thinking about what's really important. And I think free enterprise and the way of life and the way we protect it and celebrate it here in America is vitally important. And it's those men and women who protect and serve our country that really make it possible for us entrepreneurs, the people that dream about doing great things. I imagine a city where business leaders unite, where every entrepreneur in town has each other's back. And as the investor community rallies to help the most promising of the up-and-comers, together we ignite an entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And what does that look like? It looks like people like Patrick Desmond. Patrick is coming on the show today. He owns a company called Desmond's Dynamic Auction, and he is one of these people that is helping to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution by helping other entrepreneurs and helping nonprofit. The independent nonprofits are very much in the entrepreneurial camp. These people are putting their money where their town is in many cases, and people need to rally around these people. And many times they're supporting nonprofits like our veteran charitable organization, Allegiant Giving. And Patrick has been nothing short of amazing in terms of helping us to do what we do to help the veteran community and to help the entrepreneurial community. So stick around. I think you're going to enjoy hearing Patrick's story of how he became an auctioneer. And it's an interesting type of occupation to be an auctioneer, but Patrick humanizes it in a way that I think we can all respect. So stick around, my friends. Super excited about today's show. I have Patrick Desmond of Patrick Desmond Auctions. Actually, I think it's Desmond Auction, Desmond Dynamic Auctions. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time, Patrick. You and I have become friends over the last few years, and I have worked with you on a few projects. And so to be able to tell your story today is quite an honor. So how are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Yes. Desmond's Dynamic Auctions, because if I can overthink something, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. So, well, yeah. You added dynamic because it's not an ordinary auction company.
Correct. I focus on benefit auctions. I raise money at galas, golf tournaments, crab feeds, anywhere with a microphone and a need. And I like to make fundraising fun.
Okay.
So by putting the word dynamic in there, I just thought it would look a little different than antiques and collectibles, and which I've done and I can do. You know, I'm a professional auctioneer and I love raising money and I love selling stuff and talking fast. But my primary focus is raising money.
Yeah, you've helped us with a few of our auctions for charitable events, and you have what I would call a very high EQ, right? Your empathy quotient is off the charts, and you have this special way of reading an audience and connecting with an audience. And where did that come from? I mean, am I the first person to ever mention something like that?
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, no.
No, a lot of people say,
people say connecting. You know, I was an event coordinator for 20 years, you know, from the ground up. And I think perhaps trying to read a room and seeing events not go where they need to go, I think I've got sort of a big picture approach. It's a huge relief to not be the event coordinator in charge of every last detail in the room. And by just being the auctioneer, I'm pretty much the entertainment. So I can really step back and look and see what the room needs, perhaps. I think that's sort of where it comes from. I'm the oldest of six kids. By the time I was four, I had five. There was five of us, so I was entertaining and coordinating all the time.
Well, so I want to talk more about the business, but how did you end up getting involved in the business? Because you were doing stand-up comedy. you were doing a lot of other things, and then the auction business sort of snuck up on you.
Correct. Basically, for the last 20 years, I've been working with the Northern California Resource Center up in Siskiyou County, California. This is up by the Oregon border. My wife grew up there. I had a home up there, and I had a good job, and we were raising our daughter, and life was good. We had 16 acres, and we lived near her parents, and it was a beautiful thing. She got transferred down here, and which was great, and a great thing for her and a great thing for our family. But the Northern California Resource Center, I continue to work with them, and what we do is we help underserved communities in Northern California, mostly around natural resources and economic development. So this is Fort Jones, Etna, Yreka, California, north of Mount Shasta. We opened a resource and event center there, a barn that we renovated, so the community could use it for community meetings, those sort of things. A person who was in the community, was also a film director, came by, said she wanted to do a film festival there, or show movies. We realized film festivals, you don't have to pay for the films, they pay you. So we started the Jefferson State Flicks Fest. It's a fantastic film festival, over 55 films every year. Instead of statuettes, we give out belt buckles. The people in Los Angeles love it. They all come into our film festival every year. One year, a gentleman came up to me and said, hey, I like your room. I'd like to do an antique auction here. Would you co-produce that? So I looked at it, and the auctioneer made a lot of the money. I said, well, heck, I'll be the auctioneer. By then, I had been doing stand-up, and I liked getting up in front of people. I like pushing myself. So I went to auction school in Missouri. Out of the blue, real quick, last minute, like I'm going to do it. And it was a few thousand bucks, and it was a commitment. It was 6 days, 12-hour days. And I didn't know what to expect. You go to the Missouri Auction School, the oldest auction school in the world. Turns out it's at a Holiday Inn outside St. Louis, Missouri, in the middle of January, very icy and cold. I didn't know how many people to expect. How many people you think go to auction school three times a year? How many?
I would say 50.
85.
Okay.
I expected 10. I didn't think anybody. Who'd go to auction school? 85 amazing people. I mean, people right up your alley, Mark. I mean, people trying to change their lives. They want to be auctioneers. Who does that?
Not everybody. Okay, so auction. I've before I met you, I've been to other auctions. I bought a car at Hot Dog His Nights. I've been to. I used to flip houses. I still do at some level.
Right.
And you go to the courthouse steps, and there's an auction. But the way when you go to a fundraiser, it's a lot different. And so I'm wondering, the people going through the school, were they all going through it to learn how to just talk fast and run an auction, or was the part of the process learning how to sort of be in the benefits type auction?
That's
business?
A really good question. It was very much business oriented. Auctions
okay.
are set prices in almost every industry. Almost
yeah.
every industry annually sets prices by auction, when you think about it, commodities. So we would basically spend 90 minutes practicing our chant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at a $10 bid, now 20, now 20, can I get a 20? Doing tongue twisters and counting very fast up and down. And then we would go for 90 minutes to a class on a particular segment of the business, auction business, car auctions, auto, antique auctions, art auctions, real estate auctions, heavy equipment auctions, it just guns, on and on and on and on. And for 6 days. And then we would practice at night. And I was not getting the chant at first.
Ah.
And it was hard. And I was very discouraged. And I was sort of like, okay, Desmond, your string has run out. You think you're something, you're not.
Were you the only one that wasn't getting it? Or was there a handful,
felt like it.
Handful of you know, students that were having trouble?
It was a handful. But
okay.
most of them had been around auctions. They had grown up in auctions. This was in the Midwest. Most everybody was from rural. They had family in auctions. I was brand new to auctions. I had been to auctions at county fairs. I had worked as a director of operations at a county fair, but I didn't pay much attention. So I'd seen the auctioneers, but I just assumed I could do it. Well, it was a sober awakening. But my classmates, we were in a small group of 10. We broke into groups of 10, and they rallied around me. And because I was going to go home, and like, I'm cutting my losses.
Okay, how many days in? So it's 6 days.
Three nights. The third day, we did an art auction in St. Louis. All 80 of us line up against a wall. And I'm like ninth because I wanted to get it over with. And I went up there, and you had two items to auction. And you were excited if you sold your art. There's about 50, 60 people in the audience and 80 auctioneers. And if you sold your items, that was a good thing because some items didn't sell. You didn't get bids. Well, I got bids on both. It was buttons from a convention and World War II medals. I remember it. And I sold them both like $40, $50. And I was all excited and high-fiving all my classmates. I went to lunch with my two of my favorite classmates. One was a former drill instructor, and one was a very young gal from Missouri, rural Missouri, whose boyfriend was an auctioneer and had given her auction school for Christmas. And she was hoping for a ring. She's now happily married and has a baby. But she didn't get the ring. She got auction school. But these people, so we went to lunch, and they're like, hey, yesterday was really good. And I was like, yeah, it was great. I did a great job, you know. And they're like, yeah, you didn't do the chant.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, what? They said, you didn't do the chant. I'm at a $10 bid, now 20, now 20. Can I get a 20? I'm at a $20 bid, now 30, now 30. Can I get a 30? You tell them where you're at, and you tell them what you want. It's pretty simple, but it's challenging if you don't know how to do it under pressure. I have just gotten up there and gone $10, $20, $30, sold. I didn't do the chant. I didn't realize it.
You didn't they hadn't taught you that in the first
few
days?
They had taught me, but I went blank.
Oh, gotcha.
I got under the pressure, and I just went $10, $20, $30, going once, twice, sold. And I was just so like the blood, I'll just never forget it. And I was like, what? And he's telling me this. I look at her and she just kind of shakes her head like, you didn't do the chant.
You didn't even realize.
And could tell they've been talking about me like, somebody's got to tell this guy he didn't do the chant. And I was just mortified. I'm like, I'm going home. I'm packing my bags. I'm calling Southwest. I'm going home. No. They said, we'll help you. We'll figure it out. So after school at night, they would go back downstairs to the hotel, you know, meeting rooms, and they would sit in the audience and they would throw things at me when I didn't get it right.
Okay.
And they just wouldn't quit on me. And then it went off in my head. And $100 bid, now 50, now 50, can I get a 50? $150 bid, now two, now two, how about a two? Can I get a two? I'm a $200 bid, now three, how about a three? And it went off in my head and I got it. And now I have it forever.
Well, that, you call that the chant.
Correct.
The chant is an important part of the auction. It's part of the experience. How important is that as compared to the other things? I mentioned empathy. The other thing that you bring that I've noticed is I would call it the courage of conviction to believe in something and have a point of view and not have the, a lot of us might get afraid to describe something in a way that is impactful, but you have that. You can drive home a point better than most people I know, and I almost, this is me as an audience participant, I like the chant, mm-hmm. You're good at it, mm-hmm. But I almost expect that. You know what I mean? Now, that's expected. Don't all auctioneers know how to do the chant? The unique piece is the you. I don't know, but am I unusual in that respect?
I am super excited to hear that. I didn't know that. It's the area I feel I have to work on when we talk about the descriptions of the items, I guess you're getting at, and the mission of the organization.
That's
that
what I'm thinking
with.
Of is the mission of the organization. Well, you have to give a narrative or a story
correct.
Behind the why, and then that makes people, I guess, take inventory of what they believe in themselves and in many cases decide to reach into their pocketbook and pay some money to
right.
for something.
You're right. It's the thing I'm working the hardest on right now. It's the chant is done. I can do it. I practice it. I stay warm. I think it's very important. I think it's sort of a soothing, borderline hypnotic effect on the audience. I see it, and especially when I get a bidding war, because I try to do it so people can understand me, because these are not, you know, experienced auction attendees. I'm not as fast as livestock. They're super fast because they're all professionals in the room. But when I get a bidding war and I speed up, that's super fun, and I can see the audience kind of shift and getting into it, and I can see the bidders getting into it because they want to hear it going. Yeah. Everybody knows where I'm at. I'm at a 10, now 11, now 12. He's going 13, now 14, now about 15. Can I get a 15? That's really fun. So I think it's very important. Not every auctioneer does do it, but some auctioneers do succeed because they are good at the storytelling, and it really is storytelling, isn't it?
It is. I mean, to me, that's it. And well, so how do you tell? That's a good question, because any of us that are in sales or leadership – You know, we own our own business. It's our job to share the mission of the business, the vision, where we're going. And in many cases, these are, there are stories involved in this. And so, you know, as a stand-up comedian and a storyteller, maybe you can enlighten us on the best way to craft a story.
I come from a long line of storytellers. My father was an excellent storyteller. But I've gotten a lot of help from the National Auctioneers Association. I'm a benefit auction specialist, which is a certification. I went to school for it, and I earned it. I go to the auction conventions where we talk about this. And we recently had a presentation from a professional storyteller. I think I need to work on that a lot. I mean, I think I have a little talent for it, but I can be more efficient. I can be more focused on the audience, you know, more from the audience perspective. You gave me feedback at a recent auction that really, you know, the light bulb went on. Rick Spencer gave me amazing feedback at a recent event. So I have not, you guys are on my team. I get a lot of positivity, but not a lot of criticism, constructive criticism after events. I'm by myself generally. I have a colleague with me, but they're not an auctioneer. They're a spotter. And so your feedback in terms of what the audience, my message, how it's going to land with that audience really resonated with me. Rick really pointed out that the donors in the room have come on board sometimes way before the event, and we need to do a good job of recognizing them. And it really, really opened my eyes. So I have a long way to go on that.
Well, one of the things that I've done a little bit of storytelling in my life. Obviously, I help people share their story occasionally on the show. But I've always thought of a simple way to tell a story is connect with the audience in some way and then really take them on a journey from why to how. So why is this important and how? And I think in many, like if you watch a great movie or probably any movie, they're attempting to have this turning point in the story. And I wonder if that's kind of an aspect of it you try to accomplish.
Absolutely. And I have to work harder at it. I have to do a better job. And I will. Because it's become a priority, and I'm going to work on it. And that's exactly what I need to do. There's a story arc there. There needs to be a hero, and the hero needs to be the audience. The hero needs to be the audience. There was a lot of tips in there that I look at from my notes from the sessions I've attended with the storytelling professionals that I'll review. But I am working more in advance with the client, because essentially these are organizations that do have stories. So we try to focus on a particular client of theirs that has gone through the cycle. And either we talk about somebody whose need has been met from previous donations and then refer to somebody whose need has not yet been met. And that's where tonight comes in, where you step up and we make a difference.
Yeah, and you referenced Rick Spencer. He's one of my teammates. And I think it's important for the audience to know that I made an investment into Patrick in the auction business because I believe in Patrick. I believe that he has... you're at the beginning of something very, very special. And I think if there's anybody out there that might be listening that's been involved in charitable organizations, one of the things that you said at the beginning was fundraising can be fun or something along those lines. I think a lot of us look at fundraising as almost a necessary evil.
Right.
Like, oh, gosh, it's time for the annual thing. That's a lot of work. And I got to go out and raise money from my friends and... So you go to a nonprofit board, I assume, in many cases, and talk to them about how to raise some money.
Right, and have fun doing it, because I agree. People, I did a lot of these. You know, I apprenticed, essentially, with David Sobon Auctions in Sacramento. He's one of the pioneers of fundraising auctions in this area. And I attended a lot of events, and I saw a lot of people that looked like kind of it was obligatory that they attend. And these events started to look all the same. And there was not a lot of fun going on. And no fault of David's, obviously, just the event. So bringing the comedy side to it, essentially working with Allegiant Giving, which is your and your wife Stacy's nonprofit dedicated to helping veterans in a lot of ways. It's a fantastic organization. Well, you brought me on board, and Stacy was a great partner in this, where I said, you mind, let's try to bring a comedian in. And boy, we did. And we brought in a comedian who was a military veteran, very experienced, successful comedian, and he crushed it. And my whole world opened up because that room turned into putty for an auctioneer.
Well, that's interesting. From an audience member, that was the funniest, the hardest I laughed. I cried. I went the whole gambit.
It was.
And it was an incredible event. I mean, it was my event or our event, but just being totally objective, it was the best charitable fundraising event I have ever been to. Comedy for a Cause, Allegiant Giving. We'll do it again this year. I think it's in March this year. Yeah,
we're booked.
Anyway,
we got a comedian booked. But remember, they were doing push-ups for money.
Oh, yeah.
I always thought it looked like a big family wedding by the time it was over. The place was, tables were over, and it was just great.
It was magical. So that's when I knew you had some gift. Since then, have you brought the comedy? You brought the comedy to our golf tournament as well. It was good, but it wasn't as good.
Right.
It was.
Right.
I mean, we have a great golf tournament, but I mean, after people have been on the golf course all day and drinking, you had a great comedian. We all laughed really hard, and we raised a lot of money, and we did really good for the veterans. But there was something magical about that night. I'm wondering, has that repeated itself yet?
We went not like that. That was a great night. That's going to be the standard till the next time I do it. The golf tournaments are different, Mark, and I'm trying to apply my own experience as an event coordinator, working with committees on how to make golf tournaments more successful. And the key, I think, is to get the golfers to stick around. Mm-hmm. It's already been a long day. What time is it? I'm going to get going. So that's the comedy there was more as a magnet to get them to stay. Hey, we got a show. So the whole committee, we talked about it is stick around for the show. And so do I think it's ever going to reach a level of a room like you had? No, because it's a different environment. It's not a stand-up comedian's dream room. But it serves a purpose because I want to put on a show. I think fundraising should be fun. People should look forward to it. So by saying, hey, we're doing a show after the golf, stick around. I think it gives us an advantage over not having a show.
Yeah. And you have to keep that comedy routine. I noticed that we kept it. It wasn't as long. It was a little shorter because people's attention spans a little bit less. Right. And then when we went through right afterwards and you raised a lot of money for the veterans. So,
right.
So you've learned a little bit, I'm sure, since starting this business. What's the biggest lesson so far?
Biggest lesson that I have learned is that I am now in charge of controlling the messaging. I very much was a hired gun. I was a professional auctioneer. I was successful. I got booked and I would show up and I would talk a little bit with the client, but not as much as I do now. I'm definitely more on their team. I see it more as a business to business relationship. It's exciting and it's been fun, but I feel like I have shortcomings to work on, which is also fun.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever want to get to the point where, you know, hey, I just got the chance. I don't really need to try. I can show up and.
So, okay, walk me through the process. So you have somebody that that does events, let's call it foster kids or something like that. And, hey, it's a very important event. It's the annual fundraiser. Do you meet with the board of directors or is it typically the CEO of the organization?
A lot of the times it's the director of development is a title. And that'll generally be the person who's in charge of it. And they've done a lot of events. They know exactly what they want to do. The CEO, generally, no. It'll definitely be director of development, and they're the ones that are in charge of it. Now, sometimes it's volunteers. Mm-hmm. It's always two different. It's always one or the other. It's either the volunteers who are very open to my ideas. The director of development generally knows what they want. So I just had a big meeting this week. I've got booked to a gig in L.A., which is going to be fun, in Redondo Beach. And so they wanted to meet me and talk about it. And I felt good reassuring them that I'm good at staying in my lane. Mm. You know, they have a very successful event. It's very big. We're going to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, goodness.
So I have a specific job to do. And so I think I did a good job. I know what I'm there to do. You've got a professional MC. You've got entertainment. I have a window to get in there and do my job. With the volunteers, those two organizations, it can run the whole thing. And as an experienced event coordinator, I can bring stuff to the table. I've got to keep my parameters up. I don't want to get into the colors of the linens and discussing the parking and things that I know how to do. But it's not my job. But it is to talk about the theme and the guest experience beginning, middle, end. Because I do feel like, you know, we all work together to make sure the audience is ready to donate. So they need to be considered the whole way, because they are being asked to do something special. So they need to feel thought of, if that's the right way to put it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, they pay you some money. Did they give you a flat fee, or is it based upon the amount of success you have?
It's flat fee.
Flat fee. And then what do you get out of it? I mean, obviously, great public speakers enjoy that you get something from the audience, or what's... what do you get?
It's a good question. I get a clarity and a focus that you can only get from downhill skiing, mountain biking, and rock climbing, you know, as a young man, and, you know, where I did thrill seeking. I was a whitewater raft guide, and those areas of focus. I've taken yoga the last 10 years, 15, and I've learned to meditate. So the effort there is to achieve that sort of clarity on my own, on demand. That's the goal to me of meditating, is to replicate, but it's hard, and I'm not very good at it, but it's a goal. But getting up on stage in front of a room full of people gives me that clarity. So when it's over, I feel great.
Do you get nervous, or was there a point in time when you got nervous and then that went away?
I get nervous in a different ways every time. I don't get nervous about the old stuff. I get nervous about new stuff.
What?
Old stuff was, will I keep remember the bitters? It's very, where was I? You know, the beauty of the chant is that I don't have to think about it. I can think of comments and jokes. I can read the room because I've dropped into the chant.
Oh, okay. When you're in the chant, it's almost like you're able to think about other things while you're chanting.
Correct.
Oh.
It's very, so I have it now to the point, I used to have to think about it. Now I'm just at $1,000 bid, now 11, now 11. Can I get 11? I'm at $1,100 bid, now 12. How about a 12? Will you give me a 12? I just have to remember 12 when I get it. Or where was I? I was at 11. Right. I didn't get 11. How about 1150? I got 1150, now 12. Now 12, how about a 12? I just remember 1150. So
and
I can think about the
there,
room.
Yeah, you're thinking about the why or the item that you're auctioning and how you might describe it so that you're more persuasive.
Or the relationship between the two competing bidders.
Okay.
I saw you guys on the golf course together. I guess it didn't go well because here you are bidding against each other. He's at 12,000. You want to go to 13? It's freed me up. So I used to worry about the chant. Now I don't worry about the chant. I don't worry about remembering my spot. Was I at 5,000? Was I at 5,500? Where was I? That doesn't happen. It happened in the past, which is not the end of the world. Somebody generally knows, the bidder knows, but I don't do that anymore.
What's the most, I mean, now that you're more of a journeyman, if you will, what's the most challenging part of the business?
Well, the business is getting the attention, and it's just really hard. It's just working. You know, I went to the National Auctioneers Association, introduced me to the Coach Michael Burt, the Monster Producer Program, which was really a grassroots, rubber meets the road, make phone calls, identify customers, and secure them. So I'm still trying to do that, and that's just picking up the phone and working the business. And that's something I can get better at all the time.
On this in this conversation, you've said at least 3 or 4 times that you can get better and that you're not that good at it and you're still learning. And to somebody, which is super, I think it describes your personality, is that you're very humble, but you're really good, right? So that's the kind of the interesting thing is this this EQ that's off the chart. This ability to convey a point of view is off the chart. And then your humility is, you're the kind of person I want to be in business with because I would think that for a charitable organization, you're the executive director of a charitable organization or you're the board. You're the type of person that comes in and makes everybody feel like everything's going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. Yet you don't come in cocky.
Thanks. You know, I saw myself on video. My wife took a video of me on stage at an event, and I was like, oh, I look pretty good. It's working. When you're up there, it doesn't feel that good. You know, I don't feel like I'm doing that good. I don't know if you remember at that event we talked about, I lost my voice.
Oh, yeah, that was a challenge.
Mortified. And I took voice lessons, and I have to do more. Because it's still a thing. So that's just something I have to be very aware of. And it's distracting because I get excited. And I can't do that. In your event, I got super excited, and I lost my voice, and it was frustrating. So I have to work on that. But having seen myself on stage, I was reassured that, yeah, I'm getting it done. But I did, you know, again, I do want to convey that the customer doesn't have to worry about this part of their event, because the client I was talking about in Los Angeles, she's not going to be there. She's pregnant. This event's going to go on without, and I just said, I just want you to know, you won't have to worry about this part of your event. It's a big event. But when I come on board, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to be there early. I'm going to be there prepared. I'm going to take care of business. As an event coordinator, that's kind of what you need to know.
Okay, let's talk about you as a person and why entrepreneurship. I think this is, because I think people want, we've dove in pretty deep on the product and your business because it's intriguing. Most of us don't know auctioneers, but we know you. We know Patrick Desmond. But you're a little bit younger than me, but you're not a young man.
Right.
And you started this business within the last year or two.
Right.
The story of you hitchhiking to a Grateful Dead concert with like $10 in your pocket, yeah, buying a six-pack of beer, and then flipping it and making some money, and ultimately finding a way to survive with no money,
right,
at a Grateful Dead concert from across the country.
Right.
Like, these are the type of scrappiness, attributes around scrappiness that entrepreneurs have to be able to do, I think, in order to survive. But I'm kind of curious why later in life this auction thing started. You know, you were a young person then, but it's been a part of your DNA the whole time. You've tried a lot of different things.
I have, but I always had a sense of stability. I grew up in Delaware. It's a company town. DuPont was the big company. Everybody had lifelong jobs, pensions, that sort of thing. Entrepreneurship was not on my radar, but the traditional path didn't work for me. I was back there, and school was not my strong suit. I was an athlete. I was a coach. That was my thing. But I didn't, what else could a guy do except go to college and get a job at DuPont? You know, there was really no other thing. So when I hit the wall in terms of failing out of school, the military, I had a medical issue, I was just like, what other options are there? Priesthood? What the heck am I going to do? So I got up and I hitchhiked to California because I heard college was free in California. And it practically was back in 1986. Mm-hmm. So yeah, by the time I got out to Oakland, I was down to $10. And so yeah, then I was just in entrepreneur mode. But I'd been a paper boy like you were, you know, and that was the sort of thing where you saw the harder you worked, the more money you made. And I always had the idea guy in terms of doing carnivals to raise money back east in the 70s was something we did. And I would put on shows. I was always the put on show guy. I had five little brothers and sisters, all fun, good attitude. We were a big giant clan, and we would put on shows and haunted houses I like to do. And I'm just not sit around type of guy. But when I got to California, and yeah, the Grateful Dead was like my goal, but it wasn't my scene. I went south, they went north, because I knew I wanted to get a job. I wanted to go to college. So then I got into the California Conservation Corps, and I built trails in Yosemite National Park. It was very challenging work. I was in the woods for 6 months. I was good at it, and they offered me a job the following season, but manual labor is manual labor, and it really wasn't for me. And I said, no, I want to go to college. So I was able to go to the Placer Energy Center in Auburn to become an energy auditor, and they sent me to college. Ah. So by then, I had a lot of confidence from hitchhiking across the country and surviving, being in the CCC backcountry program where I had excelled physically. And I sat down in that first class, and I was like, oh, it's math class. And I was in the back, and I was very like, here we go. Everybody's going to find out I can't do math. I'm bad at, you know. And then I said, no, nobody knows you here. You just picked, you know, you're all alone in California. Just retell your story. And I got up in the middle of the class, and the teacher was like, everything okay? Because I had hair down to here, and I was 6'5", and I would just come out of the woods. And I said, everything's fine. And I sat down in the front seat, and I said, go. And I was just like, I'm going to learn whatever this stupid math thing that's been haunting me my whole life. And I did very well in school from then on out because I just brought that approach to it. But I did go to college, and I did get a job, and I stayed in jobs because it just felt secure. And when I got married to my wife, Rebecca, and I moved to Northern California, I was in the fair industry. That's where we met, in the county fair business. I was at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, which is a fair. Then I was at San Mateo County Fair as the event director of events. Mm-hmm. And she was working the fair industry. So that's where we met. When I moved to Northern California, she was the director of the fair. There was no jobs up there in the fair business. So I started working for the natural resources consulting firm as a grant writer and a project developer. I also was taking care of my daughter, who's now 18. So that became the priority. I was a stay-at-home dad, working on grants, working on projects. And but my partner, Larry Alexander, the founder of the company, is very entrepreneurially geared. He encouraged me to think outside the box. So as a project developing person, when you're up there in the middle of nowhere, you're looking for ways to generate economic activity, you have to think like an entrepreneur. And when you write a grant, it's a lot like a business plan. Got a beginning, a middle, and end. Where are we going to get the money? What's going to happen to the money? And then what's going to happen? So I developed those skills, and he's the one to blame. He's the one that really encouraged me, and I still work for Northern California Resource Center, and he's been a big influence in my life, and he allows me to pursue things because he told me it makes me a better employee because I'm energized, and he supports me 100%.
And you've also, you've done stand-up comedy, and you've had your own radio show. You're a sports guy.
I love sports, and I love talking. I grew up back east where sports talk's a big deal. The stand-up comedy came from living in Roseville, working my day job, and sort of like, okay, this is not exciting. You know, I need to get scared again. What's the scariest thing I could think of? Stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
It was awful. And I did it. And I started my own shows. I realized very early it's hard to get on stage, but I was an event guy, so I'll just do my own show. And then I get to be on stage every week. So I produced my own shows for a couple of years, and that got me. So I was hiring a lot of comedians, which they really like. And we were all helping them get paid. So I sort of handled the business side, and it got me on stage. But it was very challenging. I wasn't particularly good at it. Thinking about jokes all the time is consuming, like, unbelievable. But it led to the radio show because I got on another radio show and I looked around and I said, oh, is this all you got to do? Is you can do radio? And yeah, you can do radio. So I started Pat Desmond of Sports Feed with my co-host Dave Rose, and it was a great experience. We did that for a few years. That was an entrepreneurial effort, and I made a little money at it, you know, selling some ads. And I did some remotes where I got paid for the show to come and do remotes. So dabbling. I think I have a sense of opportunity, I'm going to call it. I'm going to say not done. You could look back and say, has anything really worked? Yeah, it's worked. My family's good. My daughter's super successful, about to live out her dream as a performer herself. Right, She's an actor. But I know there's things coming. Yeah. I know that with your help and me helping you and you help me and the Growth Factory, I mean, you know, people don't know, the Growth Factory is an incubator with an investment arm, and the goal is 100 companies. There's going to be opportunities in that.
I mean, yeah, no doubt. We're going to invest in 100 companies over the next 4 years.
Yes.
And one of the things about the Growth Factory, I'm appreciative that you care about it in a way that I do. And the part that I'm loving is what I'll call the backyard advantage. And this is really rallying the backyard dream team, the most successful people in Sacramento and the leaders of the Sacramento region, rallying them to support the most promising startups in the region. It's really a dream come true for me, and it's my last several years worth of work manifesting itself into the Growth Factory.
Yeah, and I you and I have a lot in common. When I first was introduced to the concept of Mark Haney, and I looked you up, and it was the funniest thing. And I was like, wow, that guy's just like, you know, he's got a radio show, and he does entrepreneurial stuff.
He's doing all kinds of
stuff. And that's what
different
stuff.
Yeah,
and why? I don't know, because we like it. And that's when my friend came to me and goes, you got to meet this guy right here. And it is. And I know you look back, and you're like, I just thought that this was a journey that I followed one foot in front of the other. Where's it going to go? Here I am. I like it. That's where I feel about where I'm at. You know, I'm doing the auction business is going to work. The calls are coming. Everything's good. But it allows me time to delve into other things like the Growth Factory, where I hope to help activate the co-working space that you're developing and activate your investment partners however I can.
Mm-hmm. Exciting stuff. Okay, we only have a minute left, but I want to have you make sure we cover anything else that you want to cover and maybe some words of wisdom from you around, you know, your... your journey and how it might somebody might take away something from that to benefit their own journey.
I think saying yes to people and to, you know, getting outside your comfort zone. Success lives outside your comfort zone. And that's sort of what I've always done, is kind of bet on myself by saying, why not you? Go ahead. And having a wife like I do, my lovely wife, Rebecca, she's a dream. She got my back, because I'm, you know, I'm not out of control, but I'm on it. Yeah. And so, yeah, I would encourage people to say yes and bet on yourself.
Say yes, bet on yourself, marry well. And remember, ask yourself the question, why not me?
Why not me? Yeah. I mean, that's it. The radio show was that. The stand-up comedy was that. And yeah, you get humbled along the way. But and being around people that are doing the same thing, I don't see any downside to it.
Love it. Patrick Desmond, Desmond Dynamic Auctions, my business partner, my good friend, the guy that's helped me with so many things already and looking forward to great things in our future. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show, and today we had the pleasure of being joined by Patrick Desmond. He is Desmond's Dynamic Auction, and I think Patrick shared his story in a very humble way. He shared the story of becoming an auctioneer and becoming an entrepreneur, but he's always been entrepreneurial by nature in his mindset, and now I have the pleasure of partnering with Patrick Desmond to help the charitable organizations around our community to really make fundraising fun. And you know, it's the patriotic thing to do, is when you give back, you've had a little bit of success and you end up giving back to the people that that need it more than we do, and Patrick makes that possible. So I want to thank Patrick, and I also want to thank all the entrepreneurs out there that are fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, and of course, coming off of Veterans Day, all of the people out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. To the 13 stripes, and to the 50 stars, and to that one big American dream always worth fighting for, yours. Never above you, never below you, always by your side.
By the dawn. includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.